One in seven Americans will struggle with addiction during their lifetime. Want to know how you can help? Go to heretolisten.com for tips and tools to help turn addiction around. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council.
You wanted to be a teacher when you were little, but you grew up and things changed. Well, it's time to put it back on your list. Innovative things are happening in teaching today, and you can be a part of it.
Make more. Teach. Visit teach.org. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
And you're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Nathan Ruggles here with you today. Thanks so very much for joining us. We want to recognize, first off, a couple of the unions that support all the work we do here at The Union Edge. That includes United Steelworkers as well as the PSEA, the Pennsylvania Education Association. So we have on the line here with us, with the Alliance for Retired Americans, Rich Fiesta is back. Rich, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Nathan, and always great to be with you.
Well, always great to have you here on the program. Now, I know we want to talk about the upcoming budget, but I think we should probably remind everyone what the ARA is and what do you do and who you represent.
Yeah, thanks, Nathan. Glad to do a refresher course. Yeah, the Alliance for Retired Americans was founded by the AFL-CIO Executive Council in 2001 to provide a home for union retirees, and the affiliates of the AFL and other unions join us for their retirees. Many unions have their own very robust retiree programs, and we all work together and welcome anybody else who wants to join us as well. We are over 4 million members now, with state and local chapters throughout the country, and we're out there fighting for retirement security, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid as public programs, and the rights of workers and retirees to work and retire in a safe and prosperous nation.
Excellent. Well, I know you do a lot of great work with and on behalf of all of your members. Now, you know, like I said, we're talking about the budget today. The budget resolution was just released here just at the end of September. And unfortunately, it is not what we would like to see, what retirees would like to see, with a number of cuts that they're proposing, correct?
Yeah, that's right. The U.S. House of Representatives passed its version of a budget last week, and the United States Senate is going to debate its version the week of October 16th. Now, both documents are very anti-senior, anti-retiree, and frankly, anti-worker as well. They cut unbelievable amounts of money. What the Senate is going to do next week is they're going to cut overtime from programs like Medicare and Medicaid enormous sums of money. And Medicare, which we pay for, and we're supposed to have guaranteed benefits,
that's right,
get a cut of nearly $475 billion. That's for Medicare. And to make it worse, Medicaid, which a lot of seniors who are in nursing homes rely on Medicaid, $1 trillion will be cut. That's hard to believe as this country ages, that from a senior medical program like Medicaid, $1 trillion over 10 years is going to be cut. And Medicare, as we know, is a national program, but Medicaid is a state and federal program. So it's not like state governments just have money flowing out of their coffers to make up for this. So for seniors, just on two programs, Medicare and Medicaid, very, very bad news.
And, you know, both these programs are programs that so many, as you were talking, so many Americans not only depend on right now, but are looking forward to having to help secure their retirement. And you know, Medicare, just to be clear, is you know, explicitly for retirees. And we do. You see it on your paycheck coming out on those payroll taxes each month that help pay for that. And when we're talking, you know, almost $500 trillion here, but this is an environment we have more retirees coming up, correct? Who are in rising costs, right?
Yeah, that's the perverse thing about this, Nathan. That as America ages, 10,000 Americans turn 65 every day, so that's 10,000 more people who will go on Medicare. They are actually cutting the program as more people are depending on it, and Social Security, for that matter, as well. Same with Medicaid, because the most common beneficiary of Medicaid is an older, single, lower-income woman in a nursing home. and there will be more Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries just as our population ages, and the solution is to cut the program. It just turns logic on its head.
And, you know, and this is almost like a second assault on the Medicaid program, which portions of which is also for those who are of lower income and helping them have health care, that we're seeing assaults on that as well with the Medicare expansion through the Affordable Care Act. So it's like a double whammy coming from the Congress on this. Now, and this is not the only thing, right, in the budget that we're seeing this of concern. It's not just about the budget cuts. There's other provisions in there that are of concern to those who would be receiving Medicaid, correct?
That's right. The House budget, which passed last week, will raise the Medicare age from 65 to 67. It's been 65 since Lyndon Johnson signed the act in 1965, but that you would have to work two more years in order to be eligible for Medicare. And that is just crazy, because insurance companies are going to charge you a lot more since you're going to be older and not Medicare eligible yet. And on top of that, beyond raising the age, it will turn the whole program into a voucher program where you would get an inadequate voucher that doesn't grow over time, and then you'd have to go out and fight with insurance companies. It's something that Paul Ryan has had with his very extreme ideology when he was a congressman, and now since he's speaker, it's been in every budget since 2011. So it really is a slap in the face, frankly, and we at the Alliance for Retired Americans are being as active as we can to oppose it.
And thank goodness you are, because, I mean, 65 is the age, right? That if we know that is definitely the age that we're working towards, that if we want to retire at that time, we can, and we expect to receive benefits at that time. And to change that 2 years is not insignificant. And in terms of vouchers, this would mean that you got a set amount of money, right? And in the face of rising health care costs, is there any guarantee that's going to be able to cover the needs of someone?
No, the way they have done this is private insurance companies, rather than the one-stop shop we've had with Medicare, would come into the market, and you'd have to pick, and then the insurance company would get a set amount of money from the Medicare Trust Fund in a voucher-like thing for each person in that particular company. Except the way they have rigged it is the amount of money from the Medicare Trust Fund to the insurance company will stay flat. So that means the beneficiary is going to have to pay more and more out of pocket as time goes on. So it's really a 1-2 punch at seniors. First, doing away with the simple one-stop shop of Medicare, and then making you pay more to get basically the same or even less coverage over time.
You know, it's incredible to see the Republican Congress, you know, doing this, proposing this, and such a terrible impact on seniors. Now, we just have about a minute or so left, and just looking at the overall, so the budget is not just about numbers, right? It's a statement about what we care about, right, and what we want to see for our country and our seniors.
That's right. The federal budget is a blueprint of an expression of the Congress and those who vote for it on what they think that our values go, where our spending and where our priorities are. And then following the budget, then Congress has to set spending levels for the various programs. So with this framework blueprint, it's clearly showing us that older Americans and seniors are not a priority for those who are in power in Congress.
So in the brief time we have left here, I know you guys do great work in bringing seniors together and fighting for the interests of seniors. If someone wants to get involved and be part of the great work that you're doing, where do they go? Where can they find out more about what's going on?
Yeah, Nathan, we're easy to find. Our website is retiredamericans.org, retiredamericans.org. We also have a Facebook page that's very active. We're posting blogs and information there every day, too. And on our website, you can also find where our state chapters are and get involved in your own community as well around the country.
Okay, very good. Well, Rich, thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us about these important issues today.
Great. Always great being with you at the Union Edge, Nathan.
And that was Rich Fiesta there with the Alliance for Retired Americans. This is Nathan Ruggles here with you right now on the Union Edge Labor Stock Radio.
Oregon's unique approach to bringing together health coverage for state residents is celebrating 5 years. Coordinated Care Organizations, or CCOs, are the umbrellas to an array of services for people on the Oregon Health Plan, the state's version of Medicaid. Aaron Fair Taylor is Executive Director of Legal Affairs at Care Oregon, a group that provides health plan services to four of these organizations in the state. She says in the pre-CCO world, physical, mental, and dental coverage were all separate and didn't work together.
CCOs now have to really look across and think about what is a whole person's care look like and how can we coordinate that so it's easier to access and that members can have better outcomes and hopefully that we have cost savings as a result of reducing unnecessary care or unnecessary services.
There are 16 CCOs in the state, all of them working regionally to provide local care. They serve about 1 million Oregonians. Fair Taylor says CCOs are required to come up with a community health improvement plan every 3 years. The organizations work with local schools, health departments, and even the criminal justice system on these plans. She says the close work with communities makes CCOs particularly adept to respond to crises, such as the opioid epidemic or the housing crisis, because they get to hear from local people directly.
Where are there overlaps? What's happening on the ground? Where are there opportunities for us to either better communicate or collaborate? And where are there opportunities for us to build additional infrastructure or really build together the things that could meaningfully impact the health of this particular community.
Since CCOs were created and the Affordable Care Act was passed nationally, Oregon's uninsured rate has plummeted from 17 to 5%. Fair Taylor says the biggest hurdle going forward will be the state's budget. As Oregon tightens its belt, CCOs have to as well. She says organizations will do that in part by promoting preventative care services.
If we can keep people healthy, that's much less expensive than paying for emergency room visits or conditions that could otherwise have been prevented. So that's where we're going first to manage our budget concerns.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Is that a faucet running?
That's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest. Forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
I didn't know the trees were so amazing.
Yep, and the forest gives us shade, trees to climb.
That's awesome. Let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hello, and welcome back to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Nathan Ruggles here with you today. We appreciate you joining us, and we also like to extend some appreciation out to just a couple of the unions that support all the work that we do here at the Union Edge. That includes the PSEA as well as the United Steelworkers. So it is time here to discuss labor, environment, and health. It's Just Transitions time here on the Union Edge, and I have in the studio with us Patty DeMarco.
Hello, Nathan. I'm so glad to be here today, and I am delighted to have with me today a wonderful person, Danielle Lewis, who is a student. She's from Punxsutawney, PA, and she is a graduate of IUP with a bachelor's in environmental geography, and she's in the master's degree program at the Falk School of Sustainability at Chatham University, and she's also an Eden Hall Fellow. Welcome, Danielle. I'm glad to have you with us today.
Hi, nice to be here.
Yeah, it's really important to see the perspective of young people who are entering this field and to know that there is a good future coming forward with people who have leadership ideas and have an ambition to make this world a really viable and sustainable place. And one of the most important things we all have to think about going forward is our food supply, right? Mm-hmm. And you want to talk a little bit about how our food and agriculture system is being affected by climate change.
Yes, definitely. I actually started doing research in my undergraduate on land use along the Mississippi River in correlation to the growing hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico. Mm-hmm. And that actually led me into the Breadbasket of America. And they were actually using a lot of nitrogen on their crops because they weren't giving the soils a break in mm-hmm. order to catch up. So they were using a lot of artificial nitrogen supplements. This in turn ended up going into the watershed and ending up into the ocean, yep. which came out in Louisiana.
And that that zone where the oxygen is depleted by overgrowth of algae and stuff is now the size of the state of Connecticut this year.
Yes.
It's bigger than it's ever been.
And that's down in Louisiana?
Down in the Gulf of Mexico at the mouth of the Mississippi River. And the Mississippi River drains about a third of the geography of the U.S. It's a huge watershed, and we here in Pittsburgh are part of that watershed as well, right?
So yes.
You get a lot of things washed into that watershed from all over. I mean, the frack water that gets dumped illegally into the river ends up there, and mm-hmm. In addition to all the agricultural runoff.
Yes, and yeah. It's also been talked about that the rising temperatures in the world's oceans are also contributing to the overabundance of algae.
Yeah, because they grow faster at warmer temperature and they have a longer growing period. And there's been a huge algal bloom this year in Lake Erie as well because of those conditions. So mm-hmm. that's had an effect not only on the fishing, but also on the drinking water, because some of these things create toxic byproducts
yes.
that compromise the drinking water.
I was just up actually in Erie over last weekend, and they were talking about how in the area around there, in the harbor and the bay and everything, how they've seen more and more algae blooms this
yeah.
year, even
yeah.
over last year.
Yes, and that critically hurts your seafood and fishing supplies. A lot of fisheries have had problems with this. So if you bring it back to the food system, mm-hmm. this is a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the overuse of water. I'm actually now doing my master thesis in California, and I'm working with rice farmers. They are actually trying to incentivize setting up temporary wetlands on rice farms. That way the water gets used double. And
mm-hmm.
it also adds nutrients back into the soils by making these temporary wetlands that birds visit along
mm-hmm.
the Pacific Flyway.
And that's a really important thing, is to restore the normal functions of the earth in preserving the water cycle.
Yes.
Like wetlands are really important, and those are the things that in ancient times, 20 years ago or less, people would drain in
mm-hmm.
order to pave and build on.
Yes.
So you create places where the water system has been disrupted on purpose,
mm-hmm.
and you end up with a lot of serious consequences, right?
Yes. In my study area in California by Sacramento, all the wetlands there have pretty much been drained, about 98% of
really?
Them, the natural ones. And now they're trying to use farmlands, and different organizations like the Nature Conservancy and Ducks Unlimited are trying to bring back native wetlands to the area.
Mm-hmm. So trying to recreate and rebuild wetlands.
Yes.
So how do you go about doing that? That can't be an easy task.
No, it's not. It takes a lot of money, a lot
yeah.
of time, and a lot of effort.
Mm-hmm.
That's why a lot of these organizations are asking farmers to join in and be able to use their lands to do so. Because not only is it critical for farms, it's also critical to the environment as nature, because
mm-hmm.
this is along the Pacific Flyway. So migrating birds actually use this as a stop
mm-hmm.
along their migration path. And some of these birds have very long migration
yes.
paths.
Yes.
Some go clear from the Arctic Circle to Chile.
Yeah.
So they definitely need these places to rest and eat.
Mm-hmm. So if you're doing things that are like rice cultivation, where you can have an agricultural function as well as a wetland function,
mm-hmm.
this is something that will help to promote that sort of agricultural
yes. There's benefits.
Rehabilitation, yeah.
Yep, there's mm-hmm. benefits to people and animals. Mm-hmm. Also, it gives benefits to the nearby city of Sacramento. It helps with reducing flooding. It helps with actually filtering the water before mm-hmm. it comes to the city. So there's a lot of benefits that come from programs like this.
And you're doing this work from Pittsburgh?
Yes, I'm doing it remotely. I have visited. Yeah. This past summer, I actually spent a month in California
uh-huh.
seeing how these temporary wetlands are set up and actually interviewing farmers about incentives mm-hmm. and how they will adopt this in the future.
Mm-hmm. That's really excellent, because do you find it challenging to build a coalition in terms of both environmentalists as well as farmers? I know historically it seems like where there's common interest there in terms of taking care of the land for the future, it's not always been easy. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. There's still some conflict there. But in the years past, I think that the Nature Conservancy and the Audubon Society mm-hmm. has done a really good job of holding workshops with local farmers and business leaders to say, hey, we have a problem, especially when it comes to water in California. Mm-hmm. Everybody can agree that they need to be more sustainable about their water use, especially when it comes to agriculture. Mm-hmm. So they have all came together as a group and decided that they want a better future for farming in the valley.
Mm-hmm. This is really critical, too, in the Mississippi drainage area, because the drought conditions have been more prevalent for a longer time in the summer in much of the breadbasket, the middle west of our country. Yes. It's a challenge to farmers to find ways to have drought resilient practices when they've been so dependent on irrigation from aquifers.
Yes.
So you have a whole initiative of looking at different cultivation practices that are less dependent on artificial agricultural irrigation and looking at more water conserving practices. Mm-hmm. Have you explored some of those perhaps?
Yes, definitely in my work in California, mm-hmm. it's been a big concern about over depleting aquifers. Mm-hmm. And this is actually something that they've had to deal with in making their temporary wetlands and even the farmers just with growing their crops. And it's something that the Nature Conservancy takes into account whenever they are giving money and funds. If it's a drought year, they cut back and they actually save the money for the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Farmers try to use only surface water so they don't deplete their aquifers as often. But in certain parts of the country, the drought and the climate change to making it more severe. I mean, in California, we've had years and years of droughts that just kept going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely connected to climate change, and now we're just trying to handle it the best we can.
Yeah. And I think there have been some work done on using regenerative agriculture practices that are more in conformity with restoring the carbon capture into the land and preserving water in the ground
mm-hmm.
By cultivation practices that don't, you know, plow everything up, but leave cover and leave, you know, mulching and ground protection so that the water doesn't evaporate off so rapidly and is more available for more of the season.
Yeah.
But that assumes you get some water at some point.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is a problem in many, many areas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we should take a break
okay.
here if we can. I know time flies. So, we're in the midst of Just Transitions here at Labor, Environmental Health, with Patty DeMarco. This is Nathan Ruggles here on the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. We'll be back here in just a moment.